You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is I'm Ready for My Close-Up. Just before Christmas 1981, the final episode of a popular BBC drama was broadcast on British television, which saw the last member of a crew of freedom fighters gunned down in a probably fatal hail of laser fire. Now, just over 25 years later, Blake 7 has been reimagined as an epic radio adventure which has just started streaming over the internet and stars a great new cast that includes Colin Salmon, Michael Prade and Daniela Nardini, and sounds something like this.
In the 23rd century, the Galactic Federation was no longer a beacon of democracy and peace. It had become a corrupt tyranny ruled by elite factions who care nothing for the fate of ordinary people. Freedom and justice are things of the past. One man chose to oppose this.
I have a local security team sealing his apartment. I'll be with them in 10 minutes.
We can't risk any delay. Send in the locals now.
Mom, I'll be there in...
Send them in now, Commander.
Yes, Mom. Blue 5.
Blue 5 receiving.
This is Tangent. You are go for hard target entry and capture. Acknowledge.
Roger, Tangent. Going in now. Go, go, go!
Hall clear.
Living room clear.
Bedroom clear.
The apartment's clear. We've missed him. But here's something odd. For some reason, he's hung a frying pan from the ceiling.
Careful!
Hang on. There's something scratched on the base. It says, "You have been brainwashed." Everyone out!
Last weekend, I caught up with the people who were behind the return of an enduring sci-fi classic. I'm talking to the crew of the new Blake 7 audio ventures. I was wondering if everyone could introduce themselves.
Andrew Saul.
Ben Aronovich.
Owen Aronovich, I pronounce my name differently.
Alice Delock. Shall we say who we are and what we're doing?
He's the sound engineer.
Confirmed.
Okay. What do you do? I'm playing Gan in this production.
And I'm lead writer, which means I get shouted at when the scripts aren't any good.
And I do the shouting.
Yeah. As the producer then, Andrew, was it your Ben who first came up with the idea of doing New Blake 7 as an audio?
Genesis of the project is something of a long and torturous history, but when we originally acquired the rights, we started on a live-action proposition, which we are still working on. But we always had in mind of doing an audio drama. We both Simon, my partner, producing partner, and I all have always loved radio. And then I got accosted by Ben in a pub of a friend's play, who said, "I hear you're doing Blake 7. I want to work on it." And so Ben had been working on the television script, and so it was like, "Well, look, this is taking a while. Why don't we do the audio adventures in the meantime?" And so that's pretty much how it all started.
In effect, you're doing the equivalent of 3 full-length TV episodes, but they've been split into lots of bites. I mean, presumably, that means you have to have a cliffhanger every 3 minutes.
The split into chapters. We wrote to that formulae of 5-6 minutes that it had to have a sort of cliffhanger, crazy cliffhanger, but we didn't force a cliffhanger on it, because it's got to actually work as a complete entity, as a complete 60-minute episode, and it does. It was a very good discipline to work to. Ben's probably better to talk about that.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, particularly because we're at a comics convention, in a way that sounds a bit like, say, the 2000 AD tradition of writing a story that you'll get six-page installment every week. And so it has to have kind of like a mini cliffhanger, but it's part of a greater whole. Ben, if there's anything you want to do.
I can't really speak for comics, because I've never actually written a comic, but all dramas tend to divide up into these kind of 5-minute segments. Even kind of great Shakespeare plays do that. This was just a question of formalizing that, because if you watch anything, you'll find that there is a kind of three to five, 6 minute cycle, which is generally known as a sequence, and you'll go through these. And these sequences are like that little mini plays in themselves, with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Well, they are if they're done properly. And so all we did was we said, well, we will actually formally make those the chapters. And as it happened, you don't really need to force the cliffhangers, because this is where, if you were doing a story, the cliffhangers come naturally at those cycles. And because we're not actually rigidly sticking to like 5 minutes per segment, because there's a certain amount of slack either way, then it's more organic than it sounds when you write it down sort of starkly on paper.
The scripts you're doing, are they partially based on the old stories and with like a twist of your own, or do you feel like you've got the basic characters but you're going to take it in a new direction?
The first episode is quite strongly based on the first three episodes of Blake Seven. However, once we're past that, because that's the initial setup, so it's the origin story, if you like, since we're in a comic convention. It's the origin story. And there's not, you know, it's like Batman. Batman's parents get shot. I mean, one way or another, that's what happens, however often you retell it. And however moody you put the bat shots in, that's what happens. And so basically, since I'm doing the origin story, which is the first episode, that's actually quite like the original. Mm. It does diverge, but I don't want to give that away because I'm going to spoil it.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas after that, when Mark's and James's, we start to diverge quite radically because we didn't want to be tied to the original scripts. We wanted to be, we liked the stories, but we didn't want to be tied to them so that people would know what was coming up.
Well, I suppose to use modern Hollywood terminology, it's saying a reimagining rather than a remake.
Yes, or a retooled version. I mean, I think what's actually worth saying is that, well, I mean, even with Ben's script, it's quite a departure away from the original. What we've done is we've taken the original characters, the spirit of the original show, some of the core sort of plot pillars, if you like, of the show, and then we're telling our own stories within that universe.
You just played one of the chapters to a rapturous comic book fan response. One thing that is immediately apparent listening to it, that it's certainly got a greater, I don't know, epic feel to it. I mean, I presumably that was one thing you were looking at with the sound design, Alistair.
Yes, that's right. I mean, my thing in sound design is to do audio as film, if you like, because I've heard a lot of bad radio plays. I sort of put off the radio, the audio format. So my approach is to try and do audio in such a way that it's it sounds like, how to put this,
widescreen.
Audio
widescreen.
Hang on, I'm trying to think of an in. Hang on.
Both you guys have worked for Big Finish before, yeah. And certainly one thing that Big Finish was kind of promoted as was, because it's Doctor Who without the visuals, we can make it sound like $100 million action movie, albeit with a small cast.
Yes.
And we have a big cast.
We do have quite a big cast.
A very big cast.
Yeah.
Because it's called Blake Seven. So
it's
an irreducible number of people in it.
Yeah. Yes, I'm very envious of Big Finish because they don't have to have quite a big cast.
It's a good thing, believe me, to have a big cast.
Yes.
Oh, and you're playing a well-loved British classic sci-fi character. I mean, do you watch any of the old episodes for reference, or is it just you remember it from 30 years ago?
To be honest with you, at the time that Blake Seven came out, I was at Newcastle Poly and I didn't have a telly, so my knowledge of it is vaguely sort of recollected on probably stills and slightly fancying the woman who played Servalan, I think. So in a way, I think that's probably a good thing. To me, it's not iconic at all. To me, it's a good piece of drama, and you have to create the character from what comes off the page. And, you know, I had a kind of brief on the character's background, but in a way, it comes out of the dialogue. And if it's dialogue that works, then, you know, the character's kind of created for you, I think.
One thing, I mean, presumably that fans of the classic series will be looking at will be kind of the changes. I mean, listening to the panel you gave now, for example, the classic theme music has been changed. You no longer use teleporters.
Not at the moment. Never say never. I'll kick Ben. Never say never, Ben.
But I mean, you were saying that teleporters kind of handcuff certain scenes to certain kind of plotting.
No, it's not that teleporters handcuff certain kinds of scenes. Teleporters are story death. Mm. They are the black plague of all television drama, and they're an abomination that should be fought. They existed only. They existed only because people couldn't afford to do shuttles. Okay, and in the end, the stories all end up being about how they lose their teleport bracelet, which is not what a dramatic story about a struggle against tyranny should be about. It's not like, oh, we would bring down the Federation, but we lost our piece of costume jewelry. You'd think that was a bit odd. And so therefore, I don't like them. But, you know, it's an alien ship, and it's alien technology. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that a technology not a million miles away from a teleporter could rear its ugly head at some point if I thought it would enhance the story. But I'm certainly not going to put them in just because they had them on Blake 7, which I always thought when I watched the original Blake 7, I thought, oh no, they got teleport. That's all I thought. Well, it's just like Star Trek, they've got teleport. And I thought that when I was some ridiculously young age. I'm not going to say how young. And I haven't changed my opinion since.
I think the other thing is that the philosophy of the way we approached this was to keep what we felt worked and discard what didn't. And the teleport sort of fell somewhere in between, which is why I say don't discount us not doing it, but at the same time, at the moment, we don't have plans to include it.
Listening to the new music, I mean, it has a certain familiarity to it. I mean, presumably, you said you were using certain sound cues, but not trying to slavishly reproduce the original tune because it was hard to rewrite.
Mm. Yes, I mean that theme kind of developed over quite a while. I had attempted to do a version of the original theme. I had two stabs at it, and both Andrew didn't like it, and then Ben didn't like it, and then a friend of mine, he burst out laughing when he heard it. What I tried to do was I'd done some music for the trailer. I'd written custom music for the trailer, and so I was trying to use elements of that, and then trying to find a point where I could kind of swerve into the original television theme. But the way I ended up doing it, it sounded like I'd kind of wedged it in there with a crowbar, and it just didn't work. So I couldn't think
of
any
music.
It was funny. It raised a laugh, but we thought
a few tears,
a few tears, and so on and so forth. And but in the end, we thought, well, okay, everything else is new. Let's do a new theme. That instantly made it for me easier. I mean, on the occasions that I've done versions of the original Doctor Who theme, and I just went white. I thought, how can I recreate, do justice to this theme?
Yeah.
Partly because by the very fact of doing it, it's going to draw comparison. And because it's so embedded in most people's minds, nothing that you can do is going to be a patch on the original.
We might keep it as the Federation National Anthem, though, like they did in Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, yes. And I have turned it into a romantic theme in episode one. Chapter one.
How did the type with the sci-fi channel come?
Well, they came to us, actually, and we started off talking about the live-action series, which we are still talking to them about, and then we just sort of mentioned in passing, oh, by the way, we've actually written scripts and we're going to do audio adventures. And they went, oh, really? Tell us more. And it went from there.
I mean, I suppose podcasts in general have become like, you know, the late hot thing that people want to download them on their iPod or whatever. But in a way, does this follow the precedent that's kind of been set by the BBC with the Doctor Who podcast, that it showed that there's a market out there for not just CDs but actually downloadable audio content as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing to remember with the sci-fi is that it's not a podcast per se, it's actually streamed so that you can't download it at the moment. But when the CD release comes out, then obviously there will be an option that you can download it, or you buy the CD and you can put it into your iTunes, which will then interface with your MP3 player or whatever. But yes, it is an evolving market, and it's a very strong market. And more people are listening to their radio and TV now via the web than ever before. I think it's about 30%, particularly as far as those with a broadband connection, and via their mobiles. So it's a brave new world.
Now that you're the Blake 7 team, presumably this will be, I don't know how many conventions you've been to before this, but it'll be the start of, this is your second convention appearance, but presumably there'll be more to come. What's it been like?
It's an interesting experience. It's nice to, generally we've had a very enthusiastic response. We've had a few interesting responses, which you would expect from the diehard brigade. But yes, no, it's generally positive.
Cool. I mean, Owen, this could be the start of a sci-fi fan base that start pestering you for autographs.
Yes, that'd be interesting. But for me, it'd be an interesting crossover, having been on Coronation Street for a year, and but be in that world and then kind of plunged into sci-fi. I don't see why not. It's quite enjoyable. People all seem very pleasant, and but take it immensely seriously, which is, I suppose I hadn't really thought about that side of things, and people ask you searching questions about things of which, personally, I know very little. So I'm happy to defer them. And so I would never go on a panel on my own. I always go with Ben.
Which one, I mean... a friend of mine is Peter Tuddenham's son, and he has fond memories of being a child and coming along to conventions with his dad and seeing the rapturous response that he got. So,
yeah, the last time I saw Peter was when he was doing the original radio dramas with Brian Lighthill back in 98. Goodness, how old is Peter Tuddenham now? He's wonderful. He's just he's a real old school gent of the profession, as they say.
And we both live in Brighton. I didn't realise that. Yes, the two Zens live in Brighton.
Home of the two Zens.
Yes.
What's it been like for you guys then, acting in the new Blake 7?
I found it very enjoyable. I mean, I think most actors will tell you that they really enjoy doing audio work because of the amount of focus you have. You don't have to worry about people rushing on applying makeup every now and then. You can have a bogey up your nose. Nobody cares. And the way that we've worked is very kind of collaborative, all in the same studio, moving different areas in the studio, denoting different parts of the ship, and felt at times almost like doing a kind of stage version. And I think that's, you know, hopefully that's produced kind of quite urgent work, which is what you need.
Alistair?
I was going to say it's liberating, and then I thought, no! But... Well, I've enjoyed it. I mean, it's good for me that because I'm doing the sound and the music, and I'm also doing Zen. And of course, the upside to that is if I listen to it and think, "Oh, I don't like that line," I can do it again. So yes, it's great being part of the crew, technically and sort of physically with the other actors. You know, we got a good team.
The rights to Blake 7, presumably. The Terry Nation Estate has a little bit of a reputation for being difficult to deal with. How did it come about in the first place?
You may say that I couldn't possibly comment. sorry, I couldn't resist that. Yes, they did have quite a reputation. Yeah, it was a hard, long negotiation. It took about 2 years before we finally bolted it all down. That involved a rather substantial check. And sorry, what was the other part of your question?
Getting the rights. Because if you look at the history of audio plays in recent years, for example, Magic Bullet have done stories around the Blake 7 universe, both official and unofficial. And Blake 7 and Big Finish have been doing all of these Doctor Who, Tomorrow People, Sapphire and Steel. Either of them would seem to be maybe the more obvious choice. It's great that it's a new company that's doing it, but I was wondering, you know, how you pitch to them that we'll put it in a new direction and, you know, where it go to set up.
We're not a new company in the sense that both Simon and I have been around more years than we care to remember in this business, and obviously Alistair and Ben and everyone who's working with us done, you know, quite a lot of different things. So a lot of the conversation originally was, well, we've done this and this, and we want to do Blake 7, and this is what we would like to do with it, and that's really was where the whole thing started. As for, you know, whether Big Finish should have actually been doing the audios, we did talk to them about it. They wanted to just go back and use the original cast, and I personally, and well, not just me, but the company felt that it was actually, these were characters that are meant to be in their late 20s, early 30s, and a lot of the original actors, as good as they are and were in the roles, are considerably older now. And we felt that if we were going to actually take a fresh stab at the show, both for audio, but more importantly for TV and for film, we needed to sort of pin our colours firmly on the mast and say, actually, we're going to go at it in a totally new way. We are going to cast... not just for the sake of bringing in new cast, but we're going to cast actors which frankly have more resonance with an audience today that will stand us in good stead to find a new audience. You know, we could have Paul Dower and Gareth and Sally and so forth, but that was really kind of was just going to appeal, we felt, to the, you know, the core fan base of Blake 7, and for it to survive and for it to go forward, it needed to actually have a fresh injection of blood.
And you've also got some fairly big name actors in there from the worlds of Coronation Street, This Life. I mean, Colin's got a really good reputation.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, we were very lucky. I mean, our casting director, David Hall, did a fantastic job. And we were very fortunate that, obviously, with working with Ben very closely on the scripts and with Mark Platts and also with James Swallow, the thing that ultimately attracted the cast was they were cracking scripts, and that's what attracted them. And the opportunity to be involved in something which was actually breaking new ground in the way that we were actually going to be broadcasting it and also our plans going forward.
And also sci-fi is kind of cool again now, what with the remakes of Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who on TV. Presumably it's not quite as a stigma as it might have been a few years ago.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, obviously Doctor Who, Battlestar have actually helped considerably in enhancing the profile and the appeal. And I think also the other important thing is that those particular shows are defined by the strength of their characters and characterizations and the strength of the writing and the stories that they are. This is a stock phrase that Ben's always groaning when I come out with it, but it's very true that it's first and foremost drama that happens to be science fiction. And that's the most important thing. It has to work as a drama. And if it doesn't work as a drama, then you're sunk. Mm. And I think that's been part of a problem with sci-fi, or some sci-fi in the past, is it's been totally reliant upon sort of visuals and style, and the characters have somehow, and the stories have somehow got lost in the mix.
Lost in space.
Yeah, thanks.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that the BBC in the late 70s was still casting RP actors, but certainly you seem to have a greater range of regional dialects in this one. For example, Sutherland is now Scottish.
Odd question.
Really?
I mean, it's compared to the original Blake Seven, where everyone, I mean, even the regional, like Gareth, are using RP accents. I just find this like an odd question. Yes, it's the 21st century. We no longer cast people who sound like they got their accent out of a book.
Oh, no, but I mean, it seems to be it seems to be something that has almost been ignored by sci-fi over the years. For example, I think I read a couple of years ago that Hollywood wanted to do an adaptation of Arthur C. Clarke's story about the aliens take all the kids to
Childhood's End,
but they wanted to make them like entirely white, missing the entire point of the story, you know.
Yeah, I mean, radio is a very good example where if you have all the actors being very RP, you've only got one thing to stimulate. Well, three things really: the music, the sound design, and the performance. Mm. And you need to be able to differentiate the characters. And the best way of doing that is adding colour to the voices. And you know, by virtue of what it's about, which is a huge federation. It's a huge mix of people from all colours and creeds, and I think it's important you represent that. So yes, we've got Scottish, we've got Northern, we have RP, but it's a much broader voice array, if you like.
Although continuing that idea, do you have any gay characters in Blake Seven now?
I believe Zen is going to come out.
Well, I think that was always the case.
Well, I mean, the thing about the characters in Blake Seven is they're not actually having a lot of time to settle down and have any sex at the moment, so it hasn't come up. We haven't thought about it. We didn't think in those terms because it's like
I hate labelling things in that way. Yeah. That we're going to, because then it just becomes really kind of contrived.
I mean, if we were to throw some hot lesbian action at Callie, we would be accused of being exploitative.
Well, I think the great thing about well, a lot of drama, especially audio drama, is a lot of that can go in the audience's minds and what they hear. And if they hear something, whether they think that's something interesting is going on in that direction, well, let them have it. You know.
this could be the start of Blake Seven slash fiction.
Oh, well, the start.
The continuing.
A whole new era of slash fiction.
But just thinking of accents and performances, I mean, Owen and Alistair, I mean, was there anything that you sort of, you felt you had greater liberation on radio than, say, you know, acting in front of a camera?
Well, yeah, obviously you don't have to hit your mark in quite the same way, but no, I mean, it's I think it's, for me, it's the kind of like focusing down on the voice, and it just means you can really kind of concentrate on that one thing, rather than worrying about what everything else is around you. There's you and the microphone and the other actors around you, and that's it. And I think that's in some ways that's quite liberating, because you're just kind of like thinking about those things, and the rest of it can go home, you know, occasionally, except when somebody shouts out from the little booth that you fucked up. copped out, pardon me.
No, it's all right. It goes out at 10:30. You can.
Oh, Christ, I don't know what to say about Zen. Because
are you playing Aurak as well? Or?
Oh, well, if he pops up, I certainly hope so. Yes.
I think you're making giving Aurak a regional.
Excellent.
We're going to make him Scottish, so that we have like a complete trio of Scots.
A bit like the government.
Yes. Basically, well, people keep asking me whether this is like contemporary politics, isn't it? And I say Scottish guys at the top of the tree of the both sides of the opposition.
Well, I mean, going down that route, certainly people have said that Battlestar Galactica is the only series that actually deals with Iraq in any kind of, you know, reasonable way. I mean, what kind of politics have you been looking at with Blake 7, considering it's a band of freedom fighters, stroke terrorists, who are on the run from the government?
Well, I actually looked at a lot of fascist governments, right. Which I feel that people don't do when they kind of come up with this.
The military gunshow in
Argentina. I looked very strongly at Argentina and Serbia before the fall of Milosevic, because I didn't want to do a kind of like your default, it's a bit Nazi Germany, it's a bit Soviet Russia. I thought, what are these actually like? And if you looked at the original series, everyone acted as if they expected the Federation to be a democracy. I mean, all the other minor characters they would run into would run around and act as if the law courts worked. So it obviously wasn't actually a Nazi state where you had no doubt in your mind that the law courts were just giving out the verdicts that the government want, that you would get stamped on by a stormtrooper if you stepped out of line. And so therefore I felt it was much more subtle. And so therefore what you have is a society in transition. It's a society that's gone from a kind of Serbia-like kleptocracy, so like Serbia under Milosevic, where basically, you know, Milosevic's family are all getting very rich. So you have, like, Servalan's family is one of what's known as one of the 7%ers, and that's the 7% of the population who own basically everything. And so that explains a rapid rise to power. But what it is a society that's going through a series of crises, of which Blake's original political activities were one, which are leading it inexorably to becoming what we would much more see as a fascist state. And so, and then there's a difference between its colonial operations and operations on Earth. So Earth is different from how the colonies operate. And the colonies, there are different regimes on different colonies depending on the history, just like there are in real world. So what I wanted to give is, like, tyranny isn't black and white. It just doesn't work the way people think it does. It's actually much more subtle, much more corrupt, much more corrosive than people think it is. And I wanted Blake to actually acknowledge that we've moved on from just kind of like, oh, the camera points at you and people wear face masks and stomp on your head. So yes, it is informed by modern politics, but not in that kind of very specific way. Apart from anything else, I expect in a couple of years Iraq to be old hat. And so all these series that have leaned very heavily on Iraq, you're going to go, oh God, not Iraq again. That's like so last year. And people think, oh, sacrilege. No, we're going to remember Iraq forever. No, they're not.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Blake is defined by the Federation as a terrorist. And what is one person's terrorist is another person's hero. And it's the morals of that. The morality of that is a very kind of blurred line, and that's what the show is at its core is about. You know, are Blake 7, are they rebels fighting for freedom or democracy, or are they terrorists?
To find out, go to www.blake7.com. And how often are the chapters going online?
They're rolled out 3 a week, so I think it's every Tuesday, Thursday and Friday.
We didn't make the timetable. That's okay. Sci-fi.
With a CD release a few months down the road?
Yeah, we'll release them as single CDs. So Ben's episode, Rebel, will be in end of June. I think it's going to be beginning of July. Probably July the 4th. Yes, Independence Day. And then the Marks, which is Traitor, will be August, and James, which is Liberator, will be September, and then there will be a compendium of the three.
If you'd like to know more about tonight's show or download the podcast, please visit www.readyformyclosesup.blogspot.com, where you'll also be able to find links to the new Blake 7 radio series, plus complimentary material. And I'm Ready for My Close-Up. We'll be back at the same time next week.